Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
And good morning. This is Coach Chuck Griese, another week of American Tennis. And thanks very much for listening. We sincerely appreciate it. And now, gosh, we're in almost starting year 13. 12 years now, American Tennis. And if you want to go back in the archives and listen to some of the programs, go to my website, chuckcreasy.com or chuckcreasy.net. Both of them, scroll down to the finish of it, and you can get any of the programs that we've had. And this week, a new program, of course. Every week, a new program and something different from a coach, teacher, player. But basically, we're interested, folks, in American tennis and what will help American tennis. And just for all you parents, coaches, and teachers out there, just give you something to think about, to hang on to contemplate, and daggone it. Again, we always say stand up, speak out. The two rules always I heard my papa used to say is that address issues, not people, son, and you can say what you need to or say whatever you want to say. This is the United States of America. You are gifted with that right to give your opinion. Opinion. Let's get past just cliches and facts and simple small talk. Go to the opinion and ask people about their opinions. We need the discussions to go on. This United States of America, you have your freedom there, but address issues, not people. That's what we're trying to do, and we're trying to go forward, give you a lot to hang on to and think about. And remember, Edmund Burke said, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men or good people to do nothing. You know, so we have that duty. We have a duty to try to right the ship here and help the ship. A lot of changes going on, and we want to talk to him about them today. But I want to read here, and I'm going to get Mitchell Frank on the line here. Come on, switchboard. And Mitchell Frank, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Coach. Thanks for having me on.
Mitchell Frank, thank you. Now, I've got to read the outline, folks. I'm going to pump some sunshine, Mitchell. I hope that's okay. I'm going to pump sunshine. You know, good. But a few people in the United States and that I have been in. You're number 52 now in coaching tennis. I've been doing tennis, let's see, gosh darn, how many? I am in year 61 of doing tennis, 52 or something, teaching, 45, 46. A lot of days, nights thinking about how to, you know, about this great, great sport, Mitchell. And I'm going to give a little bit of an intro here to you and pump the sunshine, but it's all truth and truth telling and things that are true. But I want the people to know. I'm going to give you this quick intro starting out and just tell you, I've always been mesmerized by our sport, folks. I love our sport of tennis. when I was a kid and would go to the park and watch people play, I would say, whoa, this is something very, very special here. I mean, it was like you would go to a, I don't want to just say a ballet or a great orchestra or something, watch a great hockey player or something that was beautiful, athletic, but it from the minute I tried to do it and saw it, I realized, whoa, this is really, really deep. This is deep stuff. Wouldn't it be great if I could do something like this? And that's the way I was with it, Mitchell, back then, and I still am to this day. I'm mesmerized by the depth of the sport, but I'm disappointed. I'm not going to go that negative thing, folks, but I'm disappointed with how we have minimized it and dumbed it down for different reasons, for marketing reasons, and for people who just don't understand the depth of it. And we'll go into that a little bit, but here's what I wrote about Mitchell Frank, folks. One of the best newcomers to the coaching ranks in the United States is Mitchell Frank. He brings a perspective as a former world's top 10 in the world junior player, as the number one collegiate player for two years in a row. And, folks, he and I think Jimmy Connors are the only, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you are the only two players to win the All-American and the National Indoors in one year, in the same year, if I'm not mistaken. Is that accurate, Mitchell?
I don't think Connors did it. I think I'm the only one.
Well, yeah, I know you won two of the big top four as a freshman. And weren't you going into the NCAA tournament, I think you were something like 37-0 before you lost in the quarterfinals, the NCAA's your freshman year. Is that correct?
Yep.
So anyhow, folks, that's pretty good in collegiate tennis. And you played traditional scoring. These were long, tough matches. But, you know, I'm going to give you more sunshine there in a second. But Mitchell also, we're going to talk about this story. I want you to relay to people, Mitchell, about you getting the University of Virginia over the hump. Okay, now when I was coaching at Clemson, the University of Virginia was a team that we usually almost always had good success with. And then they had a coach named Brian Boland come along and really turned a tide there, but you couldn't get over the hump. I remember Brian's frustration. They couldn't get over the hump. And they got this young whippersnapper from College Park, was coached over to College Park, Maryland, Mitchell Frank, who had to survive a tremendous match to win the national championship point against UCLA. Mitchell, you don't remember this, but Vesa Ponko, where I was working at College Park, came running back where I was coaching. He said, Mitchell did it. Mitchell did it. Mitchell won, helped him win. They got over the hump. Mitchell did it. And everybody was very proud. Folks, so I'm giving him, here comes the sunshine, Mitchell. Okay, Mitchell, then, of course, he had a couple years in professional ranks trying to break in. He had some injuries and all that stuff that happens. But I put Mitchell now coaches junior players and his fresh perspective on what is needed and what Approach USA needs in tennis is very solid and right on the mark and accurate. So let's talk, Mitchell, if you can. I want to now let you start talking. And I want you to we've talked a lot, but could you give us a little spice here? Could you start us out by talking about you winning the championship point? This is one of those things that we want to get people to hang on to the whole show, Mitchell. So could you talk about the championship game against UCLA? It's nothing on UCLA. Billy Martin, one of the best people I've ever met in my life and all that. But it's not a put down there. But it got Virginia over the hump, where now I think they've won four or five national championships. But they got over the hump because of this guy's effort. Could you talk about, give us a little drama if you want, but go ahead, Mitchell. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So it was 2013, and I still remember the day. It was May 22nd, and we're playing at University of Illinois. It was a super windy day, and the previous year we had lost in the finals to USC. So our team was very motivated. especially because we, again, nothing against UCLA, but we had USC had been our kryptonite. And so we are going to finals. We're kind of thinking about, hey, like, which of these courts are, you know, we are favored on versus maybe not. And long and the short is that I felt like I was favored against Puget, who was a great player, but, felt like the team needed me to come through. And, about 25 minutes, I lost the first set 6-0 and was a little bit stunned. I didn't really know, how that happened so fast.
That's not a fluke. That's not a fluke because you played real tennis. I'm going to refer to it as real tennis. Okay, that means you got to win by 2 points. It wasn't no ad. It wasn't, hey, I lost 3 game points and bad luck, right? It was basically he beat you 6-0.
Correct, yeah. And I remember I was getting blown out of the water. And last game of the first set was about, maybe the whole set was maybe like 30 minutes, but the last game was maybe about 8 minutes. And so I was getting my teeth in the match. I remember on the changeover, Coach Bowen came over and asked me if I was ready to go now. And I said, yep, I'm ready to go. So end up winning the second set 6-4. I was actually up 5-2 and got a little tight, a little dicey. Had a couple break points at 5-4 to get back on serve. And in the third set, it goes back and forth at about 3-3. We realized that the match is coming down to us because our number six lost to Cruz Del, who was their number six. And
so at 3-3, I've set the table here. I'm gonna add the color. Can I be the color commentator here? Let's add 3-3. Everybody else is done. You guys realize, and you're a freshman, and you realize it's on me, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Good. Correct. And so at that moment, I definitely had played in big moments, Coach knows, and it felt like just a wave came over me, and I tensed big time. And so I played 2 poor games, get broken at 3-4. So Puget goes to serve for the match, and he gets the
5-3,
championship point.
Wait a minute. 5-3, serving for the match. 5-3,
yeah,
serving
yeah.
for the match, right?
He gets a 40-30 on his serve. And so at
match team national championship point down, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry,
and,
I'm putting that color in there, Mitchell.
It's good. I like it. And so he serves to my forehand. I kind of block it back. And he approaches with a backhand double line. And I go to pass and... I hit it kind of was against the wind. I hit a pass. It was a little bit of like a knuckleball, and it kind of hangs up in the wind, and he's closing tight. And so he hits the volley, but, it's a massive point, obviously. So I think he tenses up himself, and he kind of like blocks it down. So the ball kind of hits and jumps like pretty high in the air, and I go on the full run. And I'm against the wind, as I noted. So I'm like, okay, the lob. And, make it a really tough ball. And as soon as I hit it, I knew it was going out. I knew I'd over hit it. And so I kind of get ready to start to walk up to the net. And the team, the UCL team starts to run out. And then I see the referee pointing at the net, yelling, touch. And so apparently his foot.
He touched the net. Okay, all right. Color coming in here. Okay, color commentating. This is national championship point. Okay, he has dominated the third set after dominating the first. You barely squeaking out the second. Second set, you're in there. You're down 5-3, 2 games. I mean, he's got it. He's serving. He's got a duck on top of the net. He puts the ball away. And you're walking up to shake hands, and the referee goes, net. He touched the net, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And so, at this point, I was thinking about one thing that I think in my junior career I was kind of known for was I could pull victories out of nowhere sometimes, you know, and I was never out of matches. And so at that moment, I actually, the thought came to my head, well, what is he feeling now? And the fact of the matter that he's feeling super tight because the match should be over. And so next 2 points, I just put a couple balls in, and he just misses, like, first or second balls of the rally. So get back on serve 5-4. Go to, you know, everybody's going crazy. You know, at 4-5, I had this thought in my head. I'm like, you know, if I can hold this game, I am in really good position to, you know, win this match. And so actually I got down 15-30, and I have the wind at my back, and on this 1 point I approach and come in, which I don't do very often. And he hit the pass, I believe it was a backhand pass down the line, and I'm on the full stretch, I just kind of flick my wrist because it's so far away, and the ball kind of floats off and lands just inside the baseline. He ends up missing the pass. I end up holding, so now it's 5-all, and at that moment, you know, you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, and so I'm very, you know, excited, and I'm like, okay, I need to stay disciplined. End up playing a really solid game. He makes a few errors. He's clearly rattled. So I go up 6-5. I go to that changeover, and I put the towel over my head because everybody's going crazy. I'm like, I need to focus. And I remember, you know, Coach Boland came over to me, and I kind of wave him off. And I'm like, I'm good. I got this. And I remember the whole changeover, all I repeated was a rhyme that, you know, you had said to me many times. And it was, eyes on the prize, and they tell you many lies. And I repeated that for the whole, whatever, minute, 20 seconds, minute 30 I had on the changeover. And that's all I said to myself the whole time. And so I stepped back up. Like 3 good points, you know, and so I'm triple championship point, you know, get a little tight, get 40-30, then on championship point, he finally sends a forehand wide, and the whole team, you know, rushes the court and dogpiles me. So, you know, that was one of the most joyous moments of my dad's career, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, anybody listening out there, beside telling a story that's very dramatic, that should be make a movie out of that one. but they're asking themselves this perseverance, this resilience, this tenacity to compete, you know, keep competing to make lemonade out of lemons. You know, and this is the whole message. I'm sitting here listening. I'm going to say I want my team to listen to this broadcast because I want – and you've told them this story. I had you down to speak to our team, Mitchell, and I want them to hear this story because it's about resilience and it's about tenacity and it's about, yes, what is inside of you, your heart does matter. And this is setting up for the meat that we want to really talk to about folks to you out there today is Mitchell is now teaching very quickly. Mitchell, you went on to play in your junior career, your top in the finals of Kalamazoo, your top 5 in the world, and you're playing a player that we won't have to bring up, you know, who it was and everything, but a player that you had beaten 2 times previously. And you're supposed to play 3 out of 5 sets at Kalamazoo, but it rains. And myself and Vesa are in the office talking to the USTA office, and they had some administrators there saying, no, it's been raining. We just need 2 out of 3 sets. All through history, it's been 3 out of 5 sets in the finals at Kalamazoo. The reason why David Markin, who has passed away and used to run, he was chairman of Davis Cup and so many things, and vice president of USTA and did so many things, but he used to say, no, we've got to play 3 out of 5 because whoever gets this spot will get a main draw entry into the U.S. Open. He will be taking the place of someone who suffered for 3 days playing 3 out of 5 sets to get into the tournament, some journeyman. They have to earn it the right way. So the USTA completely nixed that, and they just said, no, two out of three is enough, and you lost the national championship and on that day, and I'm disgusted with their reaction. Oh, well, this is what would have happened. On what I remember most, though, Mitchell, was the grace and the honor that you handled it with. And I remember your father and your mother, no backbiting, no bitterness, no complaining, no whining. And I picked up on the integrity that the Frank family stood with, okay? Stood with there in that moment of adversity. I was fuming mad. Vesa was fuming mad. Out of his bald head, he had veins popping out. He was so mad, you know, but they would not listen to us. I want to ask you now about your entry days, because we've got a lot of parents out there. They can already see that we're speaking with someone who's very special, and you basically got it. And now I'm hoping you're going to make tennis your life in helping young people, which you are now. But Mitchell, something that your parents did and your father and your mother, look, D.C. is so competitive. You know, it's so competitive. People will pay big amounts of money to get their kids into the best kindergartens and then the best schools, and everything's competitive, one kid against another, all over the place. It's so competitive. What did your parents do? Could you talk about your upbringing when you got into tennis, the lessons your parents taught you, how they kept an even keel, and you as a freshman in college, you must have weighed 148 pounds, sopping wet, but you were the giant killer there. But can you talk about that? Can you go back and talk about how you started tennis and Vin and some of the people that helped you?
Yeah, I picked up my first racket when I was 4 years old. My mom played, my grandparents played growing up, so picked it up then and got very serious about it when I was 11 after meeting my coach Vin, who was, you know, just a wonderful person and wonderful coach. You know, my parents were very, very hands-off. They expected certain things that I would give everything every single time, that would run for every goal. They expected that I would compete as best as I can. With the tools that I have, they expected me to listen to my coaches, and they expected me to follow directions and treat people with respect. And so, basically, you know, you kind of add those qualities up, and you know, you're going to probably have a pretty good player, because the fact of the matter is that you know, there was no room not to work hard. There was no room not to try to earn everything. And that was the whole point. Was I think one thing my parents did an amazing job with was they did not want any free lunches, basically. So they expected me to earn everything. And I remember one time I didn't do so well at a tournament, and I'm like, oh, okay, I think I should play the next tournament. And they're like, no, you need to go and work on your game, because your game clearly is not good enough to compete at that level. So we are going to ask that you work on your game before we send you back to a tournament. And the expectation was that I would go and listen to my coaches and work as hard as I could to get my game ready for that next level. Luckily, that was something I'd never really struggled with too much, you know, overall. So I think that was, you know, very, very, you know, key in my ability to have success as a player, and utilize, you know, and I know we talk a lot about, Coach, the, you know, three elements. You know, we got nature, nurture, and self. And I think that approach instilled a strong accountability and responsibility for myself, and understand that the, you know, the the train was only going to move as far as I was going to move it. And there was nothing that they could do, you know, that was going to move the train for me. I had to be throwing the coal in the locomotive, so to speak. And so I think that those are the key things that, I mean, even as a coach now, biggest things I see is just, you know, a lot of parents just, you know, too involved. You know, they don't give their kid, you know, they try to kind of, you know, force a, you know, square peg into a round hole. And, you know, anyways, I think that those attributes are what have stuck with me and a big reason why I was able to be successful with, you know, maybe not quite as much physical talent as a lot of my peers.
Well, you had brilliant hand-eye coordination. Good Lord, you know, your body did not hold up. You worked hard as anybody I know, and you had that definition, you know, ectomorph body, which means slender, but you worked it as hard as you could, and you know, you were always prone to injuries, you know, but that's what the good Lord gave you. But nature and then nurture, we've often said, folks, on nature, I think, Mitchell, you said you had a six or a seven. Nurture, you had about a 9, great parents, and then Vin, is Vin still coaching, by the way? Let's give him a plug. Is he still coaching?
Yeah.
What's Vin's last name so people can look him up?
Oh, Vindo.
A Vindo.
Vindo.
Oh, yep. Sorry, Vin. And anyhow, he's in the D.C. area there. Look him up, folks. And then you had, of course, some great mentors. I feel very much like I was mentored in coaching the younger level and everything by Vesa. I got 3.5 years after all these years of college coaching, 3.5 years of College Park, Maryland, and Vesa was great. He let me work with the beginners to everybody, and, you know, what a great mentor there. But so you had the nature was only a 6, nurture was 9 or so, but self was definitely a 10. So hats off. The one thing I liked is the way, and again, the grace your parents had. All they wanted was, I think, children, you and I think you've got a sister. They just wanted children of character, and they knew for the long run that would hold up in any career. So that was your start. And, of course, College Park, Maryland helped a lot, Vindo there. But anyhow, so, folks, we're going to go. Here's where we're going to go with this if we can. We've used, you know, the background has been set. But I started out by saying that tennis was mesmerizing for me, the complexity of it. From the time I started, I played all those sports. And I think a lot of you listening out there probably were introduced to tennis by the same way. You played all the other sports, but when you got to tennis, it was like, whoa, this is something special. I'm going to compare it to classical music, Mitchell. The classical music has existed for over 300 years. My good friend Randy Blumenthal, who's a wonderful, wonderful collegiate coach now, up in the mountains of North Carolina, Lee's McRae University there is just, but he, you know, we often talk about how, you know, we played other sports, but then this tennis was special, and you came to it sort of with a respect like, whoa, like you would if you were going to see a ballet. You know, you don't know anything about it. That's the way I was as a kid as a park. You go and, whoa, I don't know anything about this, but oh my gosh, look at that. I used to see a slice back, and I said, how'd they do that? And then when, oh, wait a minute, how'd they hit over that ball there? And, of course, it was with wood rackets made it even more interesting because it was so, so hard to do. So, of course, you wanted to try to do it and spend hours on the backboard trying to master the skill of hitting the ball. So the reverence that you had from the start in all of us, but then you got to the scoring system and you go, whoa, wait a minute, it's not just 1, 2, 3, 4. wait a minute, the scoring system is just not 10, 15, 20, you know, it's, whoa, wait a minute. And that interesting thing you said about the UCLA match when you won the national championship, of course, was the very fact that you were able to not win a game in the first set. You did not lead. Listen, 3 hours in your match, you did not lead until the last 5 minutes of the match. Now, folks, think about that. He didn't lead. But that scoring system allowed you to stay alive and said, I got to do the right things, do the right thing, do the next right thing. Yep, that did go good. Do the next right thing. Do the next right thing. Do the next right thing. So here we are in college tennis today, which is a king. The other day I was watching a match, and they said, oh, college tennis is so good for, you know, the professional ranks. And Mitchell, in the mid-'80s, we had 41 USA players that went to college. USA-born, went to college, top 100 in the world. I think today, name this, Mitchell, you keep up with it pretty close. How many American-born USA players and males do we have in the top 100?
Don't have that number off the top of my head, but I want to say we're, I would guess 15.
15? Really? That many USA-born? I think it's five.
Yeah.
Is five.
In the top
of course, everybody knows Ben Shelton, okay, and everybody knows the Kresge kid, right, from UCLA. Is he top 100 still?
I count 11.
We have 11. Okay, and that's the most that we've had, you know, since they've started this NOAAD tennis. So talk about, if you can, your coaching. I guess we're going to set the table for where we're going. Talk about your coaching young kids now and taking them to tournaments and trying to prepare them. And to me, I believe we have a rec model. They've created a rec model for, you know, they've taken away the history, the heritage of the tournaments. First of all, I've mentioned often that kids don't play for – they don't play for points. They play for tournaments of heritage and rivalries. But talk a little bit about junior tennis right now and your experiences, what you're doing.
Yes. So I'm coaching a bunch of juniors, some who are pretty good, you know, playing throughout the USA system, and have seen them grow over the last about 3 years. And biggest takeaways I've just seen is a couple things. One, you know, the metrics that we use right now are crippling to a lot of these kids. So I constantly hear updates on kids who are either protecting their UTR or trying to protect this or that or their WTN or whatever it is, you know, to ensure that their metrics don't drop. And that distracts them from the main goal of playing, which is to be the best you can be. And if you become the best you can be, then that stuff will take care of itself. Much like, you know, I don't think that we ever obsessed on a ranking, coach. You know, I don't know if you agree. We never obsessed on a ranking at JTCC. That was never the goal. The goal was, how do I get my game ready to play against the best competition to be, you know, to give myself the best chance to compete for, you know, the biggest moments, basically. And right now, everybody's so hung up on, you know, right now and this time. You know, it's like I told a kid the other day. I said, you know, it doesn't matter if your UTR goes up or down. You're 10. Who cares? Like, in 8 years, do you think your UTR is going to be lower than it is? And they were like, no. I'm like, okay, so who cares? Why is it relevant? I always ask them this, coach. If I like, they go, do you think Djokovic cares about his UTR? and because, and the reason why I'm setting the stage this way is not to bash UTR at all. I think it's actually a useful system in many ways. You know, I think it can help track progress and, and you know, help college coaches, and you know, there's a multitude of uses for it that are beneficial, you know. But the reason why I set the stage is because now, I mean, when I play coach, you know, if somebody like drew from a tournament, it was a big deal. It was a massive deal. It'd be like, oh man, yeah, like, you know, Jim was really hurt. Like, you guys see him fall on that ankle, he might be out for 3 weeks. And nobody, there was an occasional one where, you know, hey, oh man, you know, I, you know, like I, you know.
So kids are pulling out of tournaments for mysterious injuries, phantom injuries. Mysterious injuries.
I mean,
we used to call it the losers. We used to call it the losers limp when I was a kid. That's when kids started losing. They would start limping around the court, you know. But mysterious injuries.
Well,
so the kids are pulling out now.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And the I mean, I had a player last week went to an L5. And I was telling you this about this yesterday, coaching. You know, the kid goes. And, you know, it's an L5 serious level, you know, and he played one match. He played five matches total, and he only played one match. He got four walkovers. Goes to the tournament, you know, shows up, walkover, you know. And, you know, one of them was, you know, because of homework, I guess, and the other ones were, you know, so-called injuries, you know. And actually, I was reading something a little bit ago. I don't know if you're familiar with, Albone, you know, who was a great player at Florida State, but he did like a study, and he was talking about the increase in withdrawals and whatnot at, you know, a junior tournament, and the number was astonishing. I can't remember the exact data point, but it was, you know, something, you know, he did it like 10 years ago or 15 years ago and compared it to now, and it was like the average tournament had, you know, two or three withdrawals, and now it has like 35 or 40, something.
Right,
you know,
absolutely. And Mitchell, you hit the point right on the head. Kids are pulling out. They're into the product over the process. So that'd be like you going to work every day saying, how much money am I going to make from this tennis lesson? Our doctor going in, he's going to do a heart surgery. He goes, oh, boy, I'm going to get $50,000 for this heart surgery. And, oh, the guy, okay, yeah, I'm going to do the best I can here. But we're teaching the kids the wrong thing. That's why this NIL thing that they're doing in college and the jumping around with this portal, we're recycling bad habits. People now are product-oriented. Anytime you're product-oriented, the process suffers, and we the day that you start working for money instead of money is important. I know that it's good. It's a good byproduct, but you're done, folks. The kids are done the minute they start worrying about UTRs, and I wanted to make that point to parents. The minute you start worrying about your youngster's UTR, over, ball game, no more improvement. Because they're chasing the wrong thing. They're chasing a phantom instead of the love of the sport, number one. The improvement, because you love the sport, you improve. Because you love the sport and improve, you want to be tested. Because you love the sport, you improve and you want to be tested and you get into a tournament. All those steps, you're not going to pull out. There were at Kalamazoo, folks, Kalamazoo is the kingpin. That's the granddaddy of all junior events. And again, if you ask any kid in the country, would you rather be number one in the country or win Kalamazoo? In the boys' side, they'd say win Kalamazoo. That's if you ask any player in the world, would you rather win Wimbledon or be number one in the world in tennis and win Wimbledon? Would you rather win Wimbledon or make extra $100,000 here? Well, win Wimbledon. The point is Kalamazoo, we had 51 kids pull out of the back draw with mysterious injuries. When I counted, this was 2 or 3 years ago. That's disgusting.
Yep.
Okay, now, you are saying that this UTR, I don't know any of my players' UTRs. I don't know any of my recruits' UTRs. If I did, I would not recruit some kids. I might recruit other kids I didn't really want. And parents, look, it's a good measuring stick for yourself or for, hey, you're at this, but never, ever, 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 ever look at another player's UTR and size it up or you're dead in the water. Hey, Mitchell, that kid from UCLA, did you look at his UTR before you played him? Huh?
No.
Did you look at his ranking? Or, Mitchell, did you study his rankings?
No, I didn't at all.
No, because Mitchell, when it got tough, you would have bent over after the first set and say, thank you, sir, may I have another? Oh, I lost 0-2 today. You could have lost 0-2, right, with the wrong attitude?
Yep.
Folks, turned 0-2 loss into a national championship. You take bad lemons and make great lemonade. Holy guacamole, that's what this sport does. Mitchell, I want to move on here from the UTR a little bit. Of course, my pet peeve the last 15 years, anybody's listened. Folks, it's disgusting what we're doing at minimizing the level of our sport. We're taking classical music and trying to change it into elevator music. I would say that. Not quite rap. People say, hey, what about this pickleball? We have classical music, and let's make pickleball into beach music or rap or disco. That's what pickleball is. Coach Randy Blumendahl said this the other day. It was beautiful, Mitchell. He goes, a guy asked him about this pickleball. He said, well, look, he says, the bottom line on pickleball, anybody can play for a month and probably get in tournaments. Easy. It's very easy to pick up. However, tennis, you might play for 10 years. And still not have. And so we need to understand classical music has been around for 200, 300 years because there's been a sect in our society that said we will not bastardize classical music. Is that correct, Mitchell? I mean, it's like the opera, the classics, the classic studies, the great artwork, pieces of art. That is what tennis is. The bastardization of it for marketing purposes is disgusting. They have not allowed that in classical music. So there's still a market for classical music. So that's what tennis is. The abbreviated scoring, and I'm not going to get into why they did it. I believe that it was not for good reasons. I believe that there is something or someone or some movement behind some of our leaders pushing the no-ad scoring, Mitchell. And in 2012, hang with me here because this includes you. In 2012, I've got a whole list here of the following is a timetable of coaches and players voting and speaking out against the ITA, changing the scoring system in collegiate tennis. And, folks, why did they go off to college first? Because now, Mitchell, they're pushing it down into the junior ranks, right?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
What do they tell the kids? Oh, this is the college system, right? Okay, that's that marketing.
Yeah.
Now, 5 or 6 years, the college and the junior ranks will be into the pros. So they're going to do a hard press to get this into abbreviated scoring into the pros. 2012, nearly 10,000 signatures were expressed online format against the NCAA tournament trying to change their scoring through the ITA in 2012. Time issues, there were time issues at the tournament, so the ITA and some people jumped on board and said this is our chance to push this. They had 10,000 signatures against. 2013, the ITA met, and I was at the meeting. After 5 hours of discussion, 21-19, all coaches voted to not do no ad scoring. The ITA board pushed it through anyway. It was not debated again. It was pushed through. In the ITA's own poll, 81% of the coaches voted for no changes. And they had 194, this was conducted by the great coach Lynn Loring at Indiana University, 194 women's coaches voted against. Okay, here's Mitchell Frank, I put here. One of the top players of collegiate tennis conducted an independent petition of collegiate players in the fall of 2014. He collected 1,347 signatures to oppose the scoring change. This was ignored. Am I accurate in saying this?
Yeah. So we were. Everybody was pretty against it overall. Obviously for me, I felt like I'd worked super hard my whole career to play these tough matches. And the long and the short is that, I started to rally some of my friends to sign this petition to go to the ITA and show that this was not what the players wanted. They started that year with the up through the indoors. We played with no ad scoring. We played with no ad scoring the whole up till then, and then it went back to normal scoring beyond that. I remember it started to kind of trickle in, and I remember a lot of people were really upset because. You go there, you play, you go there to play, not just, and coach. I mean, I'm sure same for you. When I was a junior, everything was full. I mean, you would play occasionally a 10-point breaker, but most of the time it was full. There was very, very limited number of not full matches. And now I look at Kalamazoo, and in the consolation, they just play 10-point tiebreakers. You didn't even play a full third. So, or in the juniors right now, I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, I mean, past weekend, they got a little bit of rain, and they're like, all right, we're going to short sets, no ads. I'm like, you're really playing for, a good chunk of points, right? And a good chunk, big momentum in your career, and you're going to four game sets. Like, how is that a thing? So.
Well, it skews the results, and skewing results favors whoever's putting on and the pays the house. That's what I'll say about it. And where they're going with this is not in the right direction. This is not done, folks. It's a red herring for them to say this is done for the welfare of the kids. This is done. It's too strenuous. This is done for... to speed the game up, nobody wants to be at something for longer than 2 hours. We're going to get good crowds. Any of you looked at, I got some videos sent to me of different conference tournaments where the host school was not in the finals, and you could shoot a shotgun off in the stands and not hit anyone. Nobody's there. Nobody cares. Nobody's out here to watch, oh, wow, this is no ad. It's so exciting. No. I've got 13 reasons why. Out of 20-some, why no ad is not favorable, nor is it fair to the player that's worked harder. It maybe is a good tool for somebody trying to learn how to serve and volley or something by playing quick pressure. But for someone like you who constructed every point, it doesn't favor the mental or the strategic part. I'm going to go on here. We created an organization called the Men's Division I Tennis Association to try to rival the ITA, and we conducted a poll in 2014. We had a vote 67-11 to stay with traditional scoring. Then in 2014, tremendous pushback from coaches and players in the summer of 2014, the NCAA cabinet, they tabled the ITA-USTA move. To abbreviate the format, the ITA director sent out 3 emails within an 8-day period with directives to all coaches that they must use abbreviated scoring format, no ad scoring, and the fall events if they wanted to be in the ITA. The ITA basically squeezed them. And they ran and they disregarded the NCAA format. Now, the NCAA that next year ran with traditional scoring. And I think that's where Stevie Johnson won, Mitchell. We talked to his dad. Stevie Johnson went undefeated for 2 years in a row in college tennis. That's correct?
Yeah, correct. 72 in a row.
Yeah, 2 years in a row. I asked his father. His father had passed away, but Stevie Johnson, he said, would he have lost? He said, well, on another program, his father had said, that Stevie would have lost probably 10 to 15, maybe 20 matches over his career, and maybe he would, but his mental toughness and everything, and you know, and it flourished in the pros where they used traditional scoring. But the ITA basically put in their own people into the NCAA committee, and they pushed the thing forward. And it really annoys me that some of the coaches would be adamantly like, oh, this is done. It's done. This is the way it is. And you either have to be a lazy coach or someone who does not respect the integrity of our game to be for no ad scoring. And I'll tell you that straight out, folks. You're either lazy, you don't want to work hard to teach your kids how to construct points, or you do the work with fitness and take fitness and conditioning out. You're either lazy or you don't honor and respect the sport. The integrity of the sport, 155 years now, 155 years, Mitchell. Now, think about over the years, now we have champions with abbreviated scoring. Are we going to give an asterisk there? Should we do an asterisk? If we had three of the greatest people in tennis, Rod Laver, Ken Rosewall, Stan Smith, Chris Everett, you know, all these people, if they come forward and say, oh, we want to change the scoring system, you would say, are you kidding me? You're changing the history and the heritage? Wow, that's not right for you guys to do that. But we're allowing administrators to do it. So, Mitchell, thank you for allowing me to talk about that a little bit. We've got folks, tennis, if you love tennis, we've got to do something about this still. And again, that's our duty to speak up and stand out. Okay. Mitchell, what I'd like to do, we got about 10 minutes left here. Could you talk about, I want you to talk overall about, you know, your career when you went out to play pro tennis. What the avenues are, what you have to do, how would you go from college to professionals? But then I also want you to talk to the parents and coaches out there a little bit about ABCs, what to do and what not to do as far as bringing the kids along.
Yeah, so I think if we look at the development process from, you know, kind of younger age to you know, to a pro-level player, I think that we can kind of start to break it down into a couple kind of segments. So obviously you have, you know, the segment where kids are, let's say that they're kind of getting decent at 10 years old or whatnot, are starting to play, you know, competitively. You know, you're kind of looking at between 10 and, in my opinion, about 14, you know, where you're really trying to develop, you know, the foundational skills that they're going to need. You know, I always tell my kids, no matter what your identity is, your tennis team is like a house. If you don't have a foundation, that house is going to blow away as soon as there's a little wind or there's a little storm. And so I think that in those, you're trying to, you know, take advantage of the fact that the game is a little slower at those times. You know, the kids are younger, they get to develop their ability to see points. You know, they're very much like a, hopefully before, you know, they become, in my opinion, teenagers, upon which you're trying to get them more into the minds of how can I compete at a very, very high level. I think the big thing right now, just in my opinion, is we're missing a huge opportunity with college tennis as a whole to get kids to the professional ranks. And you know, Vesa, who, you know, we both know, has always kind of said to me, you know, look, I mean, at the end of the day, all these college programs have better resources than probably even the USTA, you know, as far as facilities and access to facilities. I mean, you know, go look at, you know, the University of Virginia. We got, you know, 6 indoor courts. We got 7 outdoor courts. Oh, there's also courts on campus. Oh, you know, there's also clay courts at Boar's Head that you can, you know, try to use. You know, you have unlimited balls. You have unlimited equipment. You have unlimited, you know, unlimited everything you possibly need. Unlimited strings, right? And before you know it, you know, you have this great opportunity. I think that that's where also we are struggling a little bit here because, you know, as I transitioned out, I noticed a big difference from when I played professionally as a junior. That difference was I had been in a bubble. And one thing that JTGC had always done, which I think is absolutely superb, is we always been uncomfortable. And we'd always had to be uncomfortable. And basically, once you went to college, we were given the world. And you go to play on the feature circuit, and it's the exact opposite. You know, pretty rough conditions. You're going to rough and tumble places. Don't have a lot of support financially, you know, emotionally. You know, you're kind of out there on your own. And so for lack of a better term, you know, we need to ensure that players are, you know, not getting too comfortable in their environment to have success. Because it was funny, when I was a junior, I was 18 years old, I would travel to futures and I thought I was at the mecca of tennis, even though I was in these like little grungy places. And basically afterwards, I felt like I was in, you know, the bottom of the barrel. So I think that is a big part of the success is making sure players are mentally ready for the struggle ahead, which is especially, you know, as you know, Coach, it's not a glamorous experience, you know, when you're kind of starting out.
It you hit on a bunch of things there about college. Really, that's true. What you said is the best facilities we have are the college programs. Even in the Lease program, you have wonderful courts, you have facilities, you have coaches there, you have things. So being able to get on a college team, the disappointment comes in college, though, that we have dumbed it down with the scoring system, and now they're doing this thing called clinch matches. In the spring, if a team gets to four, it doesn't matter. You might have three other matches on there. They're going three set, and they stop the matches. We had a match this year where we were serving for the match, 40 love up in the game, and they stopped our match because the clinch had been decided. I won't tell you, but it was a top university school, and it was a big, big win for our guys, and they stopped the match. And it's just not just heart-wrenching, but it's defeats the base purpose, doesn't it? You know that.
You want that, Coach? I'll give you something for all those who are listening out there. So my second year, Coach, 2013, there was a kid who was number one in the country. His name was Michaelis Labidus from Tennessee. So luckily, in ACCs at the time, we played every match out, full third too. We completed every match, and in SEC they didn't. And he was number one in the country throughout the whole spring. Coach, you know how many matches he finished in the spring? It was about five or six matches.
He only finished five or six matches.
Only five or six. So what happened was he got a couple, like, you know, good wins, and then he'd be down. And he'd be losing, but the matches didn't finish. So he was, you know, so he was number one in the country. And actually, funny enough, I played him in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And I was coming off my knee injury, but I was about 30 in the country. I beat him about 2-1, you know. Nothing against him. I was actually good friends with him. He's a very nice guy, but I felt like if he completes some of those matches, you know, that ranking might not be where it is, you know, and that just. That was an example where, you know, I remember we were in the ACCs, and I remember some kids were like, man, like, you know, I'd be ranked higher if, like, my matches weren't, you know, because some kids would lose matches, right? Like, you know, that were after the clinch. So totally on board with you there.
It's really, I don't know what people are thinking. you know, the administrators, what are you thinking? And again, your administrators are usually not coaches. They have not coached. They have not played to a large degree. They don't understand the depth. And again, if you're looking at the product over the process, you're going to be disappointed and you lose. So you get a win that day maybe as a team, but it's awful. There's no growth that takes place. And so therefore, again, we're shortchanging what we do. And, you know, so I just think it's a recipe for the destruction or the, you know, the uncoming of tennis, the undoing of tennis, you know. And so, Mitchell, about out of time here, I wanted to, you know, just, you know, thank you for, you know, your diligence, your perseverance, the work you do with young people, teaching them, you know, through the process of the growth first. Again, you know, I'll let you have the last word here, but I wanted to tell you, I played tennis at the park when I was a kid for the three drugs that I got, Mitchell. It's called dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins. the dopamine I got from being able to hit the ball in the middle of the racket, and when you hit that perfect backhand slice. Again, I think we lost that a lot, folks, with the racket technology. Anybody that's ever played golf with wood clubs, with the persimmon woods, and hit one square versus the Big Bertha or something. Anybody that's ever hit a baseball square right in the middle of the bat versus an aluminum bat. Anybody that's hit it with a wood racket in the old days with a nice, beautiful set of gut strings, the sliced backhand is with the dopamine rush used to get with something. But we also played for the adrenaline of competing. And if once we make ranking more important than the competing, we're taking away that adrenaline, you know, from the competing and the growth and the ups and the downs and the kick arounds and the learning that happens. But also the conditioning, the endorphins come from the conditioning and the training. And we're taking out conditioning of the tennis. I just think we're training a rec sport, or we're training an after-school activity. So I'm going to give you the last word there. I could talk to you forever. I absolutely am just so proud to know you. And you're a breath of more than fresh air. Folks, it's Mitchell Frank. And Mitchell, how can people just look for you? Anybody in the D.C. area, or if you're in the D.C. area, look up Mitchell Frank. That's all I'm going to say. But I'm going to give you the last words there, Mitchell. We got about a minute.
Yeah, I think, first of all, thanks for having me on, Coach. It's always a pleasure. And you know, thanks for all your mentorship, you know. Coach knows better than anyone. For anybody's listening, so you know, he's never scared me wrong, and you know, thanks for all your work with me and you know, so many others who you profoundly impacted. I think the last thing I would just leave on would be that if we can get players starting to focus again on the right things, which is, you know, as you know, the passion for the game, and trying to become the best you can be, and trying to become excellent, we will see that our players will start to, you know, go to the moon. But it's going to take work, and it takes a lot of discipline in, you know, today's world where, you know, we're looking for quick fixes and whatnot. So I think that if we can all work together and be better, I think it'll set us up for success. So.
Well, Mitchell, that's great, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. And people, folks out there, thank you, and I just appreciate listening. And listen next week again on American Tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy. You're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life. Has very little to do with win or loss. See you, Mitchell. Thank you.
You got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
come.